Same China, different stories.
We are the ones that found our way in a new life.
Okay. Welcome to, well, I guess 2024 first recording. And this episode release, we were just talking about this probably towards the end of the month because that's the way it goes here. This is Adoptees Born in China podcast, reintroducing I talk to and share adoptee stories, all usually from China, mainland China, mostly. But today I'm speaking with Emma, who reached out via email and shared a little bit about your experience, but I would love to hear more from your perspective, of course, and then the podcast is always a good opportunity. So Emma, please go ahead and share more about your adoption and some of your experience.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So I was adopted in 2001 from Hunan province, and I was found at a gate at the city civil affairs bureau by a doorkeeper in middle July. So that's kind of my story there. Mm-hmm. All that we know is that I had a red sweater on and I had my umbilical cord still attached. Mm-hmm. So they kind of estimated my birthday using that information. And then I was adopted 9 months old. So mm-hmm. when April 2002, I was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And I've lived in Indiana since my adoption.
Okay. I was wondering if you still lived in Indiana or if you had shifted geographically yet, or if you want to.
Nope. Wow. Right, not born and raised, but raised in Indiana.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. And Indiana is on the same time zone as Eastern time zone then.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
That's where my geography is a little off. I was like, oh, I thought that was when you said Indiana initially. I was like, is that the same time zone? Is that an hour behind? No, it's the same time zone.
No. Yeah. So I grew up in Indiana, and with my parents, with adoption and stuff, they've always, from even a young age, have educated me about being adopted. Mm. And in elementary school, they would do Chinese New Year and bring in like a, you know, a Chinese dragon and different games, activities for my classmates and I to participate in. And I was like second grade. So of course, these were not rigorous mm-hmm. activities, of course, but just trying to get other students and me to kind of know what the Chinese culture is like and to kind of teach them and embrace that culture. So from an early age, I've always was integrated with knowing what the Chinese culture was like. My family also had me grow up also with a lot of the other girls that were adopted when I was adopted as well, and their families. Oh, yeah. We call them Chinese sisters. And so throughout my life in elementary school to like middle school, high school, we would do a lot of get togethers over the summers, Chinese New Year's, other Halloween. I remember decorating pumpkins, going to different activities with the ones that were nearby in Indiana. So there are some from the group that are located like in New York and I think like Virginia. Mm-hmm. But at the time there were a lot of families that were from Indiana. So the Indiana families would get together and we would do things. And now to this day, I kind of know what a lot of them are up to. And a lot of them are in college now doing their own thing, but it was really impactful. And I think very beneficial to be very close to them growing up mm-hmm. and having someone that looks like you around you growing up as well.
Yeah. Cause I'm not sure based on, some of the stereotypes and stuff from what we understand is, especially when you say Indiana, I immediately think of like, oh, there's probably not too much diversity in the town you might have been in. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So,
except I guess the others who were also adopted and near you in that town. So like that helps a lot to be like, hey, nice to know we all have this in common, that like community there too.
Yeah, because for like school-wise, middle school and high school, I did not go to I went to a predominantly white school as well for middle school and high school as well. So mm-hmm. for that time too, it was really nice to have obviously the my Chinese sisters. And in middle school, I started taking Chinese, which also was really beneficial to have an instructor or a teacher that spoke Chinese, studied Chinese, and knew about the Chinese culture as well, which really got me into trying to explore my adoption more, I would say, was a really big catalyst for that as well.
Oh, so you were able to study and learn Chinese within your school system?
Yes. So where the school that I'm in, you were offered to take German, Chinese, or French at the time, or Spanish, I think, yeah. I chose Chinese because you got to take a bus to the high school and study Chinese there. And it was a way out of getting out of silent selected reading. So I jumped on board on that idea. And I was a little hesitant at first. And it was very hard. I remember learning in the beginning, very boring. I remember being like, you know, this, and it with the culture. And obviously at the time, I didn't know I wasn't really in touch with like my adoption too. So I kind of was like, oh, it's just a thing, you know. But learning more, like I did in 7th and 8th grade, 9th grade, like I said, I continued. And in 10th grade, I had the opportunity over the summer after 10th grade to go and study abroad in China for 5 weeks for with a total immersion program with other students, not just from my high school, but all different high schools in Indiana to China. So that was when I first visited Ch first and I haven't visited since, but first time I have visited China since being born in China, I would say. So
Oh, wow. Okay. I feel like that's like a, that takes like an understanding and acceptance, I guess probably related to your adoption too, but a lot about it, like the culture aspect. I feel like that's a pretty young age.
Yes, I remember being, and my parents would definitely say too, I was very, I'm always like an anxious person, but I was so worked up, a nervous wreck. I guess my parents would say I was very stir crazy and stuff beforehand, whether it was related to just the culture, going, traveling internationally for this first time without my parents for 5 weeks, all of that really played an effect on me. And with the, like I said, the full immersion, I like there was no phones or anything. You could email your parents like one for an hour once a week, but that was like it. So it was full immersion. I remember we stayed with a host family that we all were placed with host families. There's 13 of us, and only one other student and I were adopted from China and are Chinese. The rest of them were Caucasian students. So
Okay, that was
very,
my follow-up. Yeah, I was like,
very
oh,
interesting.
okay.
And the one that was adopted from China also went to my high school. So we definitely grew throughout that trip and spent a lot of time together in China. But I remember totally getting to China, and I had some issues going at first. Once I got there for like 2 days, 3 days straight, I remember just crying and saying to like the coordinator, like, I don't feel safe, I remember. And I was obviously safe and I was very cared for, and it was a very program that did a lot of protocols and stuff. But something inside me, I guess, wasn't regulated that I didn't realize, you know, like being birth country, it was very interesting for me. And I didn't realize how to, I guess, communicate that at the time. And that culture, you know, people always say culture shock in general, just going to that plus the, you know, the birth country, knowing, you know, that my birth family lived here or lives here, and that I, you know, I'm coming back here. I don't know. It was very overwhelming. To go through that. And to like kind of grieve that too, and to realize, you know, this is where they are. It kind of was kind of like going, I kind of compare it to people, or give an analogy that where it's kind of like going to a cemetery, kind of you're seeing, you know, you're going to the place where someone kind of died in your life per se. Obviously, we don't know. I don't know if they're dead or not. Kind of like that, since I didn't know anything. And obviously, everyone looked like me in China. So that was piece of it, was that everyone around me looked like me, and I was not used to that in Indiana, of course.
Oh yeah. No, I was gonna say it sounds like even with conversations with your parents, like they're very open about Chinese culture and adoption. There's still like aspects of parts of that conversation that they can't really like share or help you relate to until you're there.
Yeah, so it was super cool. Even though I struggled at the beginning, I definitely thrived a little bit more once like the weekend was done, the first couple of days, again, the groove. It was for school, so I would go to school like every day, like 9 to 5, and do my school, spend time with my host family. And as a class, we would go do immersion excursion trips, like going to different local places and stuff. So that was super fun. I enjoyed it. I really liked in meeting other classmates that my host sister had too and stuff. I remember I felt very like connected to the students and stuff. But I do remember a lot of the time, like I said, since my classmates, and they told us before the trip too, but like my classmates, the other 11 were Caucasian. A lot of the times, all of the students are very interested in just the Caucasian students and wanted photos with them. We're like, oh my God, they're white, let's get our photos. And even public, like not even in school, that was the whole thing. And my friend and I would just always, I remember we would just play like clapping, hand clapping games, or just sit on the side, because obviously they were like, who, like, we don't want you in the photo, you look like us, like why would we want that, you know? And obviously my Fred and I were like, you know, confused. We got it because we were Chinese. Obviously, we looked like them, but we also were like, wait, like we're American too, you know? So I remember that. And then I totally remember one time we're in the cafeteria, and my friend and I were speaking Chinese. And obviously, our Chinese is not native. So definitely have an accent and definitely don't sound native. So I remember some students would look at us weird, like, why are you talking like that? You know what I mean? Or the bus, I remember some guy couldn't understand why my Chinese was not like native, but I looked Chinese, and he kept saying that to me. And then my instructor had to come in the way, and on the bus, she was like, she was born in China, but raised in America.
And they didn't
understand that. Like, the guy was totally like, okay, I don't understand, you know, but those kind of things now looking back, like, I definitely think that has more of a role with the adoption stuff and the identity piece. But I really did like enjoy overall the experience and seeing the culture and being on the ground that I was birthed at, or it was, you know, it is. So.
Wow. 5 weeks is not too long, but I feel like that's pretty significant at the same time.
It was a long trip, and it was in the summer as well, like I said. So it was in the peak of the season. Yep. So very, very hot, very damp, I would say. But like I said, it was very fun. And I luckily had an opportunity to stay in touch with my host family even after.
Good.
So I went in 2017, and then 2018, the four of them came to America to meet my family, which was super, super cool and humbling. So they first time. Yeah. So that was really neat. And then the year after that, my host sister, who I went to school classes with when I was in China, she came to America to study for college. And so she went with my family to our Thanksgiving in the middle of a rural town in Illinois and stuff. So we are super close and still stay in contact, which is super neat. I'm happy that I've been able to keep that relationship going.
Oh, yeah. Wow. You're answering all the questions I'm going to ask. I was like, oh, these are great. I'll just let you keep talking. It's great. It's like a great storyteller you are as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And then they, my host family, actually, they just this year moved to California as well. So I plan on time. There's no official plan, but I do plan on, you know, going to California, visiting them and seeing them, since now, obviously, it's way easier to go visit than
yes,
China to see them. So, which is really neat. So I'm really grateful that I, out of the program, that I was able to gain a great other family, I guess, from the other side of the day. So, yeah.
Wow. And they moved to California. Wow. Yep, okay.
They came for my little host brother's education purposes and freedoms.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Have a better education in America. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Because I think even with current times, I feel like there's a feeling now, because you said 2017, but even just as we keep progressing to, and as history has shown, just like the shift of like how adoption impacted in China, that they're like more cognizant of it, or they're like more aware of it. But I don't know if they're still stuck and not necessarily, I don't know, some policies and stuff are not going to change at all. So hearing that the whole family's moving, it's like, whoa.
It was impressive, I think, too, that not impressive, but it was shocking too, because with the pandemic and everything, that they were able to move everything and the guidelines. So I'm happy to know that they made it safely and found a place in California that's worked for them and that they can pull in and stuff here. So yeah.
Wow. Okay. So because the host sister is studying in the US now, or I guess might be done studying, right?
She graduated but is doing research for a school on the East Coast now. So she's not living with family, but still is in the States doing things as well.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like they've created a life outside. And so it sounds like the family's now closer, and the host sister's also like able to visit a little bit easier as well.
Yep. Yeah. So it's super. I'm, like I said, really thankful for that relationship. And sometimes it's weird. Sometimes I don't know, like when I was there, I kind of in my head imagined them being like my birth family, for example, just and then being so like accepting and just being so loving and nurturing. And like, for example, since they like met my family, for example, that was a big thing for me, very symbolic. And obviously they're not my birth family, but that was very interesting of how that worked out and how my brain kind of used them as, I guess, not a filler, but how my brain kind of worked in that way too, to have them symbolize that as well. Since I looked.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful to hear that they were very accepting and open too. And
yeah, they like were. They did say though, when I got there, that, well, actually not when I got later in the trip, when we got closer, they did tell me that they were expecting, when they agreed to host a child, they were expecting a white child.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
They got my paper, they said, and they were like, yeah, we were not expecting Chinese.
Yes.
Yep. Sorry.
Yeah. That very, very white American name.
Yep. But I was like, I promise you, even though I don't look like a little white kid, that I promise you, my Chinese is not where, you know,
yeah,
speakers is. And I have a lot of American nurture roots as well.
Oh yeah. I imagine that too. Like the host families, when they agree, they probably imagine, yeah, it's gonna be like a white kid or
Yep, very much in shock. But obviously, like I said, very accepting and loving, even though I was not what they thought I was going to look like. But still, it worked out. Obviously, now they still,
I
accept
know.
me, even still knowing that I don't look like a little
Oh
white kid.
yeah. I don't think that's gonna change. I think we're all gonna stay the same. I can't imagine you changing to be a white kid anytime soon, so.
Nope.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we all probably grow, because I do think from that time of 2017, or when you were, I guess, a junior in high school.
I was sophomore, so it
Oh,
was
sophomore.
summer break, so going into junior year.
Okay, yeah. I mean, even from high school to 7 to 8 years later, we're gonna look different, just slightly, maybe.
Yep. Maybe some wrinkles, maybe. Yeah. I'll stay short though. I am very short, so I'll stay short, but it's not. Nothing else will change in that way, probably.
Oh wow. And in your family here too, were you the only sibling? Were you the only child? Did you have siblings too,
Oh,
or no?
so my brother, funny coincidental story. So my parents found out later in life that they, or like figured out that they wanted kids later in life and could not have kids and had some miscarriages. So they started the adoption process. And during the adoption process, they found out they were pregnant. So my brother, so their biological son, my brother, is 8 months younger than me since they found out. So yeah, so he's a 2002 baby, and he was actually born the month after I was adopted. So
Oh, wow.
my mother actually could not go to China and bring me back to America because she just gave birth to my brother. So my mother's father went with my dad to bring me back home since she could not bring me back
Oh,
home.
wow. So it's like they had to basically raise like twins in a way.
Yes, that's what people always say, that we are definitely like twins in that sense. And what's really interesting too is that I might get this wrong, but I'm pretty sure the day in early March, my brother, his due date was the day that they received my photo, actually too.
Ooh.
Super interesting coincidental.
And like timing.
Yep. And then my mom,
Wow.
I think, found out that she was pregnant on my birthday, but we had no clue. It was my birthday, obviously, at the time, but that year she found that she was pregnant on my birthday day with my brother. So super
Right.
coincidental stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you and your brother are the same age.
Yeah. Yes,
Or
what's it called?
close.
That we my brother, there's definitely a joke in the family that when March comes around, we are the same age for like 4 months, but and then I get the upper hand. Once July comes up, I turn a year
Yeah.
old. So I
That's
do
okay.
have revenge on him for after J July happens. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. It's like, oh, yep, I'm the older sibling. You have to respect me or something. Comes in handy then.
Yep.
Wow. Okay, because you said the host family met your family, so that means they must have met your parents and your brother too.
Yep. And everyone obviously got along. We did different excursions in Indy area, like doing the zoo and art museum and stuff. So it was super fun. And I think we had like a cookout. I might be wrong. I'm pretty sure we did like a cookout thing for people to meet, them too as well, like family and stuff. So it was super cool. And it was interesting too, because with the language barrier being an issue, you'd think that maybe we wouldn't have much to talk about, but it actually like flowed really well, because I feel like, they both were my family, and then my host family both had a lot of like love to give and a lot of great pure
Yeah.
intent. So it was never like, oh, sitting there crickets because we couldn't understand each other. I was able to
Yeah.
translate some, and my host sister was studying English at the time, so she was able to translate for her parents, and I was able to translate for mine, and vice
Oh,
versa.
wow.
Yeah, it's super cool, even because my mom, my birth, not my birth, my host mom, dad, and brother at the time did not speak any English when they came. And my parents don't know any Chinese either. So it was my host sister and I that could translate both languages.
Wow. That's quite kind of wild. It's like, yep, I was a translator. I mean, yes. So your Chinese is at a more than conversation level, as we say.
Yeah, I took Chinese from 7th grade to my sophomore year in college. I should have continued. I do regret it. I should have just kept going just to keep the language going. But I do remember, like, I can still read Chinese, speak it. I think I'm my best is listening and speaking, but I'm not the best at reading it anymore. But I'm pretty good at like picking up if I saw in a TV show, movie, or heard something, I could pretty much pick it up. And I always tell people, like, if I was dropped off in the middle of nowhere in China, I could function. day.
Right, right.
Might not be perfect, but I could function.
Oh, yeah. And probably pick it all back up again because you have to use it. It's like, all right, it's somewhere in there, right? In this brain.
Yeah. So yeah. It was super cool doing that, and that trip alone was neat. And just now where I am after post-China and finishing studying like the Chinese studies for college, I feel like now I'm to a point to really understand the past and adoption and what the impact adoption makes on someone, whether it is international or nationally, you know, an American adoption too, as well, kind of when what being adopted really means as well. Because obviously like growing up, like I said, I had all the resources, all the love, and I still do have all the love and support from family and friends that have, you know, not seen me for being Chinese, but have really accepted me for who I am. But through a lot of therapy, podcast learning and everything, I've learned a lot about like the trauma of being adopted and how like being adopted, you know, trauma didn't start just when I was adopted. It really did start, you know, like being in the womb and stuff and learning about that. And then being, you know, born and then take whatever the story is, obviously, of how I ended up with a gatekeeper, how that all happened, you know, being an orphan. And then coming to America, all those different pieces and how that kind of plays into who I am today.
Oh, was it that trip that sort of had you, like, did it force you to, like, think about that more than you were, like, were you ready for that or no?
I think the trip, when I went to China in 2017, I think I didn't realize that a lot of the feelings and thoughts I was having was actually that. Now, since I'm able to say, oh, the reason why I felt unsafe, or I kept saying to people I was unsafe, is because, you know, like I said, I was back on like my birth country soil, and because I felt very dysregulated. And a lot of times I feel like I disassociate myself with, you know, Chinese, with America, like my family, America, and with people that are Chinese, because I'm kind of in the middle sometimes where I'm like, I, you know, obviously born in China, but nurtured in America, you know? So sometimes I feel like when I was there, that was a big thing for me too. And the fact that everyone looked like me, I was like, oh my God, like that. I was being like, wow. Cause in high school and middle school, it was very easy to pick out me out from a crowd. And then you know, then my class, it was the opposite. My classmates were everything, you know? So, and it wasn't like just like star of the show stealing attention. Eva, I just was like, this is where I came from, you know, and everyone, I guess I didn't realize in 2017 how much of an impact that would make later. And now reflecting back on that trip and seeing, and even like I said, when the guy was like, oh, how do you, you know, you don't speak good Chinese, and why is your Chinese like this? You look like me, why don't you speak that? Now looking back, I can learn and see why those things happen and learn from that. But also I'm still, like I said, grateful for that trip and that I was even able to have the opportunity to be in my birth country. But obviously I think I didn't realize the impact and the emotions that it had when I at the time until now.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like there's different perspectives about like having the anticipation or just like going into something and like then it's almost like less intense. Maybe it's probably still very intense, but not as intense as it would be if you were like very knowledgeable going into that experience about, all right, this is what I should be expecting or something. I don't know.
And I was like, I knew, obviously, we did a lot of prep work for like the program that I was a part of, doing the culture shock stuff and about, you know, really, like things to taboo topics to discuss and not discuss, like with our host families and citizens there, and other things too. And my parents obviously knew like I have anxiety naturally. So like, obviously, they were very supportive and helpful with navigating my buildup before the trip. I just don't think I realized, and obviously, I don't know how you tell. And obviously they didn't know because they are not adopted, but how I would prepare for the emotional toll that it would take for birth country and everyone looking like me. Like, obviously, like I said, the culture shock, everyone said, you know, the time change, the culture is different, obviously, but that birth country thing and just looking like everyone, it really impacted me. And now looking back and having actually a conscious memory of 2017 versus 2001, I can see the difference there. It's like, wow, like that really did, you know, trigger something in me that I didn't realize that was in me like ever. So that's if I didn't experience that in 2017, I don't know if I could be where I am today processing my adoption now.
It's like something that helped contribute to like processing, not necessarily.
Like I said, I'm super thankful for the trip and stuff. And I love the trip and everything, even though I was not where I studied abroad, I was nowhere near where I was adopted. But even though, like I said, just being in the country itself was very
humbling
and a lot of epiphanies I think happened at once there as well. And like I said, looking back, being like, ah, that's a lot of aha moments now in life, being like, that's why I felt those things. Or, oh, at the time, like when I was crying, or if I had issues there, I thought I was like the weirdest person on earth because all of my classmates were fine. They were doing their own thing. I was really struggling. And I just thought I was just a wimp, you know, that I just couldn't do the time change or the food or the people. No, I realize now that it was more than just that.
Oh, and yeah.
The student, my classmate that also was adopted from China, so that's Chinese, her and I spent the most time together, and was 5 weeks, so 35 days, every day we spent together. So even the weekends, her host mom would drop her off at my host families or vice versa. We would hang every day. And it was a great bond, obviously a lot of good memories, but now looking back too, I can see maybe that we were so not even like dependent, but reliant on each other in that way too, because we were both kind of processing, but didn't realize at the time that we were processing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's like the only other person there who is experiencing the same thing as you and has like the comfort. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't think we ever, like, if I looked at 2017 me and you would tell me that's why, you know, you were bonding with, I'd be like, oh, I just thought it was just a cool friend in high school that I continued a relationship with. But now I'm like, oh, it makes sense. Not their kid, you know? And like I said, even with the photos and stuff, different places we'd go, we definitely were attached at the hip more. Except for that, even like when, obviously, like I said, when my classmates were got a lot of attention and
focus
for the way they looked versus us, it was very, I mean, it wasn't like heartbreaking. It wasn't like I felt rejected by them. It just was weird. I remember just being
Yeah.
But like, I have all what they have. I do the same stuff every day at home that they do.
Yeah.
You know? I just look like you, you know, different skin, but, but yeah, so I think that it was really nice to have someone else though there that was a Chinese adoptee as well, because I wouldn't have her. Might have been a whole different story for that trip.
You know? Who knows? I mean, it sounds like it is partially of it's like a cool person, good friend. Because even having a fellow Chinese adoptee there, it's great you guys got along. Because what if you didn't get along? Because well, that's a different story.
We did definitely get along. We stayed in touch a lot afterwards, and like I said, we went to the same high school, so we were super in touch with everything. And when my host family came and visited the next year in 2018, like, she was there too and did excursions with
them.
So we stayed very in touch and friendly after the trip, obviously with time and then college and everything, we definitely grew apart, but I do remember her very well and having her there. And I think we both looking back are very happy and fortunate that we had each other for that.
Yeah. Sounds like appreciate definitely for the time too of where was it that you guys studied abroad? Was it
Hangzhou?
Hangzhou.
Yep. So we went to Hangzhou. Yep.
Wow, and then okay.
For a week, so 4 weeks through the host family. And then afterwards, we spent three and a half days in Beijing. And then we went to Shanghai afterwards.
Okay.
At the end of the trip.
Like, I'm guessing you went to the big sites, you know?
Yep. which was cool, obviously. And even if you're traveling to California for the first time or Montana, of course, that's the stuff you look up on like TripAdvisor, see, you know.
Of course.
Things to do. I just wish that obviously it wouldn't be through a school trip, because obviously they're managing a whole set. I really wish that I had time, or realize now where I am today, that in 2017 I just took a day or maybe and just like sat in that environment, being like, okay, this is my birth country, let me just like sit in, you know, the environment, whether it was reading a book or just being outside or something. I feel like it was very, like you said, tourism. Let's go all do these things that, you know, you hear about on TV, and when you look up China on Google, these are all the top things to do. And it was great, like I said, it was really cool and humbling, but at the same time, it felt very rushed to get these things done, obviously, to tour. And obviously, like I said, I'm not a tourist too. Like, even though I'm from China, but I've been in America forever, and it was cool to see. I didn't feel like a tourist. I didn't fit in that role, I felt like.
Yeah, it's like one of those, like, okay, we have this like checklist we gotta do while we're here, so.
Yes, it was very, that part was very interesting. I remember we had to make these baskets and weave baskets, and we were on like a time crunch. It was raining. It was like, you got to finish in your basket. And I remember finishing mine. I was like, okay, like, what do we do? You know, thinking we would have time just to look around. Nope. You just sat there till all of your classmates, and it was started to rain. So then it started getting super dark and there's no light in the building, and you just finished your basket. And then it was like, okay, now we're going to go to the field and go to this place. And we saw a lot of China in that sense in a short amount of time, but I just wish we just like sat there and enjoyed it. It's like, relaxing, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it's a very structured environment. Yeah, I'll probably put a break in between. Sort of does go into the next question I always usually ask, if you'd like to go back to China, because I know you've been to China now, but would you like to go back to China? Do you think you would go back to where you were adopted from? Do you want to? Or
so for me, that is something that I have thought, definitely, like my family and I have talked about a lot, even from when I was a child, and when my mom and dad would do the Chinese New Year stuff, it's always been something that they've said, like, they're very open to, would want to do with me. Where I am now processing the adoption and the trauma, I don't know if I'm quite there yet. I still, it's something I'm denying and would never do. I think it'd be way more traumatic than I think. Like, the idea of doing it sounds really cool. Like, oh my goodness, like, see where I was adopted from, see the orphanage and stuff. But obviously too, that's, I think it'd be very triggering to, like, be in that spot. I know I've looked up just a Google search on home visits, you know, and you see where the actual orphanage is, and the place where I was adopted, I could see, and it gave it like a short itinerary of what you would do. And one of it was like, see one of the playrooms at, you know, at the and which is like cool. Obviously, that sounds, it was marketed very as like, oh yay, fun.
Interesting.
But like, about it deep down, I was like, oh my goodness, like, I don't know. Obviously, I was 9 months old, but like that, and obviously, I didn't like play standing and walking with a toddler, but I don't know if I would be comfortable right now going, grieving that and being in the place where I was, you know, and since I don't have this memory, I have no memory, you know, that I'm able to express or remember, but somewhere, like I said, there is that memory. So I don't know what that would be like. But obviously too, it would give me some closure, which I'm interested in too. And obviously I still identify as a Chinese. So it would be cool to be more in touch with my heritage there. I think though, just like where I am in the process of figuring out myself and the adoption, maybe not yet, but something definitely down the road that I would be open to for sure. Mm-hmm.
It's a whole process. I do think there are a variety of people who can go like full on and do everything. And there's some who like can do part. I mean, I'm one of those people just like part of the way, not the whole thing. Yeah. And there's people who don't have any interest at all. So it's like, all right, there's a whole wide range spectrum here.
Mm-hmm. And I've imagined what it's interesting though, because I've imagined as a kid, even like, you know, when you're told the story, you see, you're finding paperwork of what that really, like, if someone were to say, close your eyes, imagine that. I can imagine it, but based off how, you know, cartoon movies and movies are projected as what adoption looks like, just dropping off the baby at the gate. That's all I have in my head, obviously, because I would like to know more about that instead, so I get the right education. And, but besides that, yeah, I think it would be a cool trip, just very overwhelming and probably. Oh, yeah. But I think now that I'm older, I would know now, since I've been to China once, I would know like all of my like triggers, at least for like being, this is what it looks like. I wouldn't have to deal with those first impactful moments of, oh my goodness, everyone looks like me. Why do I feel so unsafe or unregulated right now? Because I have felt that in the past. So going again, I would know, okay, this is how I felt the first time. If I feel like that again or a different way, now I know cognitively that is my adoption that's triggering it, not just the fact that I'm, you know, a high schooler that has never traveled internationally before, you know?
Right. Yeah. There's other things that you were also having to deal with. I think high school age is a very sensitive time too. Very pivotal too. I was like,
So I think it'd be cool. I don't know if I would go, probably family. I don't know if with China sisters, if that would be a trip. I know the families have talked in the past about like, if we ever did that, but I'm not close with any of them. I know my mother is close to one of the mothers pretty well. Mm-hmm. So maybe with their daughter, I don't know whether she is in her journey though, you know? So maybe someday, but just now, like I said, I'm just trying to process the other pieces and, you know, go through the ebb and flow and kind of see what has made me from that experience and the nurture piece from America as well. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And then as we keep growing, cause I mean, you mentioned 2001. So I was like, I think it's been 2024, 23 years, 22.
Yep. 23 years. Yep.
Yeah, I was like, you're in those, I feel like those very also another defining period in my opinion of like the 20s.
Yeah, and that's obviously I'm developing too, and in high school brain too. So maybe that is something that down the road would be an option. And finishing college, just finishing college too. I don't know if that, like I said, the time frame of, like you said, being 23, just out of college, first time full-time job, all of that stuff. Maybe that might be time to open up a can of worms, because obviously any place you go, you can book a trip anywhere and be like, oh yeah, let's go. But going to your birth country, to the orphanage that you were at for 9 months, and that is not really a vacation, I would say. So
It's like,
more of a mental experience than probably I would like to put myself through right now.
Have you traveled to other countries outside of China too,
I have
internationally,
not.
or?
No, the farthest I've gone since then is Alaska with my family, two almost 3 years ago, because we went in 2021. But besides that, I've only traveled in the United States. I have no issue. Like, I would travel internationally. There's nothing that I'd say, oh, I can't do that. And I think it'd be cool. And I like traveling for that aspect. So I'm definitely open to more traveling as well. But I definitely feel like I resonate with going to, like, for example, if someone were to say, do you want to go to Europe or Asia, even Thailand, India, somewhere, I would definitely say probably somewhere in Asia more than a Europe, just because I feel more connected. Somewhere deep down, I feel more connected. Even here in Indiana, there's a local Chinese restaurant that sometimes I'll just go to and eat by myself, just because I feel really connected there. And there, if I don't go with my friends that are Caucasian, they speak Chinese to me. And one of my friends, white, they don't speak Chinese, so that kind of helps me feel comforted too, and makes me feel, very at home and safe, which is interesting, because sometimes when I'm there, I'm like, wow, I feel more myself here than I do to other places, so.
It's like there's a comfort to, yeah, I can relate to that too. It's like there is a comfort of like being by myself and going into like Chinatown or Flushing or something. It's like, oh, this is so nice.
Yeah.
But I've definitely traveled. I think like most of the Asian countries I've been to is mostly like China, and I think I went to Malaysia once, but I'm gonna go to Japan soon, and I feel like that being like a bit distant from China makes it easier to be like, oh, I'm gonna enjoy this like a vacation.
Yeah.
Because like I have no connection to Japan or Japanese culture in a way that I guess other people might. So it's like Japan.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that experience?
I'm going in March.
Oh, you're
So
going in March.
soon.
Okay.
I've
Okay.
never been, so I was like, I've never been in Japan, but I'm excited.
Yeah, Thailand seems cool too. Thailand is
Yeah, that
like,
does seem cool too.
yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I would it be like, I do wonder if I went to a different Asian country than China, and how that would make me feel, since it technically is not my birth country, but people would still look more, resemble my appearance more than Europe. I just wonder what that emotion and triggers would be too as well.
I mean, Europe, I feel like you see one area, it's very similar to other areas of Europe, just like slightly different architecture, but still nice.
Yeah, and Asia obviously is way different everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's really cool. Wow. Yeah, that's something else that you did that study abroad experience at like high school age, and then 'cause I feel like you hear about people doing study abroad even within like high school age, but I guess being like an adoptee and then going back is like a whole nother thing, that
Yeah,
another layer.
I did not realize at the time what the implications of doing that were. Of course, I was so excited, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm going to China," and obviously it was a big deal. And I remember, but I did, I think, have the mindset for so even. I mean, I think somewhere deep down, I did know that it was my birth country. But I remember I treated it like a vacation in my head, like I built it up with my best friend. So I was like, "Yay, I'm doing this trip." As a high schooler alone without my parents, woohoo. And then I got there, I was like, oh man, this is not a
Not
vacation.
only.
No, yep. I was like, that is the complete opposite. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you were also going to school too, so I was like, is that really vacation?
Yeah. And
But
obviously the schooling was interesting. It was a lot of culture classes and like doing Tai Chi and obviously language and a lot of culture immersion as well. So like the schooling part was really nice. They did a very good job at that piece. Besides the school and stuff, I just, like I said, there are certain, even in the classroom setting too, though, there were points where it was like, oh, like, every, I'm in this Chinese classroom with all these Caucasian students. Just my classmate and I are just sitting there. It's just like, wow, like I could have been. I just sometimes I thought about like this could have been me, you know, if I wasn't adopted too, you know. So
yes, yeah. I was wondering that too. I was like, I was like, how often did that happen? Where you're like, this could have been me right now.
Yeah, obviously not Hangzhou, but in the sense of, you know, being in a school,
yeah,
seeing all those other kids like in uniforms. And I remember there's such culture difference. Like, the girls at the school, they couldn't have their hair. They had to have their hair up in a ponytail if they had hair longer than their chin. They couldn't wear contacts, couldn't wear makeup. It was very specific about rules.
Wow.
Yes, it was very rules, right? Very specific. I remember my classmates and I were like, oh my gosh, that's so strict. And then sometimes I would think like, wow, that would have been me if I,
I'm like,
if I was in China still or something. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I feel like I still have that feeling today. I'm like, you know, could be here doing this thing. I'm kind of glad I'm not. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or obviously too with, I don't know if you've seen the documentary One Child Nation, but obviously with that documentary too, I think on Amazon, that documentary really shows too, like the truth behind if I really was found at a gate of the bureau, like, is that really where I was found? Or
yeah, exactly.
My birth mom bombarded by the government to take me, or was I trafficked? You know what I mean? All those different possibilities that no one will know.
I know. Yeah. It's like, whew. I do remember when starting to learn about adoption, processing it too, is reading the pretty like deep stuff on that end. It's like, well, that's a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
Let's not get too deep into this research and like stuffed away.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that obviously. And I found that I learned about that in college. And even then in college, I was like, oh my goodness.
Oh, still. Yeah.
It, like shook my world. Yeah.
Yeah.
And made me see that. And obviously like now like listening to podcasts about adoptees from China and transracial adoption and Dribbles helping me, you know, learn more. And it's not even just like something that's sad, just like really shocking and to help understand those moments and personality and what really has brought me here. And now obviously like, you know, family members, my mother's side is Italian and Irish, and my dad's side, I think, is more German. I think but American German. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sometimes they'll say, my family will say like, oh, you're part of us. You're Irish. You know, according to us, you're Irish and German and, you know, Italian, but obviously like, I see what they're trying to do, you know, trying to make me feel included, but at the same time, I'm starting to realize now growing up that I do want to say, you know, that I am like Chinese. Yes. I am a part of your family, of course, but I am not, you know, those a part of
right.
That.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My mom, I know, like I said, they're just trying to be nice. Or a lot of them, sometimes people in my family will be like, oh, you and your aunt are the only brown eyed people in the family, which is super cool. And I know they're just trying to include me, but it's also like, I get that. Yes, we are in the same spot.
Yeah.
There's no one else in my family that is Chinese or adopted, you know?
Yeah. I mean, because my parents are like Irish descent for sure.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not really Irish, but you know.
Yeah. And I get it. Like I said, they're super loving and will hug me when they say it. And of course, very, very sweet.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't actually think that I am Irish. Like,
no.
And that's great. And obviously, like, I learn about their hair. Of course, like, we know all about the family history and they talk about stories about all of that and being.
Yeah.
Descent or not, and that's great and it's cool and I love learning about them because obviously they are my family, but sometimes I can't help but think like, wow, like I don't have that, like I can't tell you about mine though. It's not like my brother can say, oh, my grandmother's bloodline was this, that.
Yeah,
for me I'm like, my, you know, adoptee's mother's mom was this,
right?
No clue where my mom, my birth mom, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, I guess your brother does have that experience of like, this is the bloodline I see that I come from. Because you do see those photos from like 19, 20, 30s of like ancestors. And I'm like, you know, those are not my bloodline ancestors.
Yep. And it's like, here's your great, great grandpa. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I didn't know who he was. And it's just like, wait, but that, you know, even though it is my great grandpa, it's not my great grandpa.
Yeah. I was like, it's not my great grandpa, but okay.
Nothing like me. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, sure. Like, and even the older, like even older photos, I was like, yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that's not my great grandpa. I think as a kid, I did probably say that once. And I don't remember if that went over well, but.
Yeah, I definitely probably have not been the most, I've not been the most sensitive, but say it. And I have a bad habit of doing that, saying things.
Same.
Through, that probably come off offensive. And obviously I'm very thankful for my family and all their love, their them accepting me and my culture and teaching me about my culture and stuff. But obviously there's only so much that a Caucasian can teach you about being adopted, about being Chinese. Like there's only there. And so I'm so happy that being there in China taught me that, and through now processing and learning more about not just like China, obviously in the history of China, but just knowing more about adoptees and transracial adoption.
Right.
Says like, you're not alone, but obviously I'm not alone. And these are the certain things that maybe were in my past too, that like, obviously I won't ever really know, which is as frustrating as it is, also cool. It's kind of a mystery. I say it's a mystery game when it comes to going to the doctor, you know, when you check the form and you're like, for college now or work stuff now, it's always like, are you Asian? Check. But now it's like, are you south from southern China, northern China, southeast China? It's like, hey, this is very,
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's like, no history known. I don't know.
Yeah, every time I go to the doctor, it's like, what does your dad have? What does your mom have? And I'm like, well, they have this, but I'm adopted. So I don't.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And flying a fluke, nothing like serious major, but they'll be like, oh, does your family have this? Like, you have this. And I'm like, oh, no.
No.
Probably genetic. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then even as kids, it's like, you can't really stop us from what we're going to say, whether we're adopted or not. Kids are just honest. Like,
yeah.
It's like, we're just going to say stuff that you probably don't want to hear.
But
it's like, eh. I mean, present day of being like now 30 and going through the 20s. Mm-hmm. Surviving my 20s, I guess I should say. I find that I definitely still have that attribute, that like no filter necessarily in saying stuff. Not trying to be offensive necessarily, but definitely like speaking my mind and my opinion. It's not always received well, but I feel like that's just a part of being human. And as we get older, we're like, the more you like are more true and authentic to yourself, the people who like connect will be the ones that stay around and accept that from you and not necessarily try to diminish it.
Yeah.
And that's like, now I feel like I sound like some old wise person, but I'm only 30, so it's not that old, much older wisdom. But yeah, it's like keep that. Don't like stop yourself from it just because it's a part of who you are. If it's a part of who you are, like just keep doing the thing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and I think with me growing and evolving, being in the 20s, early 20s, and for rest of life, definitely it's something obviously too that I see as an attribute that I will carry. You know, the rest of my life, that even though adoption is very traumatic and triggering, it has its pieces and stuff. It definitely has made me stronger, has made me who I am. And it's something that elementary, middle school. Oh yeah. Like I avoided it. Awesome. Of course. I'm like, why? I don't want to be this. Like, why do I not look like everyone or ew? Everyone has questions and stuff. But now I think it's really cool. And it's something that I talk about to people. I'm like, yeah, I'm adopted. And you know, it's something that's actually is a conversation starter or something that I
love.
So I think that's been a big change too, and growing as well, and being able to just been really neat.
Yeah, because I see you have tattoos, and it looks like
I do. I have one in Chinese right here that says "Jian Chu Sha Chu," which means "keep on going." Yep. And then I have two that are on my ankles that say in Chinese "Discover and Growth."
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I do know they are Chinese though, like I said, because I
You studied
in different languages and they mean different things. And some people are like, oh, does that actually say what you think it means? I'm like, oh yeah. Like,
oh, it does. Don't worry.
I can write them the characters right now out for you. Yep. So
yeah. Are those in your handwriting that you got?
They're unfortunately just a Pinterest handwriting, but they have, I think for me, where I was in my life, definitely symbolic with the time frame of when they were, inked on my skin, I'd say.
Yeah.
And when I got tattoos, definitely were have more symbolic memories and ties to that as well. And obviously too, like some people get Chinese tattoos or other Japanese whatever language because it looks cool. For me, of course, that's an added bonus, but for me, I really do like my three Chinese tattoos too, because it shows my heritage and what I obviously identify as well, and makes me who I am. So that's also shows them. Then I have one that's in English on my other, this forearm right here, that's cursive, that says "love above all else." But the other ones, all my other writing ones are in Chinese. I have no other English or number. I don't have like numbers, Roman numerals or anything. They're all Chinese. I specifically at that time, even though I was younger, did that because I wanted, if I had something written on me, I wanted to be Chinese, and not just so just only Chinese people could read it, just because, like I said, I really resonate with that and I really find that important.
Yeah. It seems you put a lot of thought into it, which is very, it's, I feel like, very important with tattoos.
Yep. It's on you forever. So if it's going to be on me forever, might as well be, you know.
Yes. Oh,
and
yeah.
Where I came from. So.
Mm-hmm. So you were, was the first one you got, the one on your arm that says?
No, the first one I got is it is an outline of fire. That sounds weird to say without, you know, if you listen to the podcast.
It's yeah, there's no visual. Yeah. It's like, okay, so take a picture of all your tattoos. Hey, send it through.
And that's for my, a lot of them symbolize my father. Mm-hmm. He blessed. A lot of them symbolize like our relationship and stuff. And then after I got the fire one, I got the ankle one, the Chinese ankle one that says Shenzhong. And then after that one, I got the Jianchu Shachu on my other arm. Yeah, my other arm, my right arm. And then since then, just like little, I don't have a sleeve.
You just have like smaller ones placed around.
Yeah, I just have smaller ones that make up, I guess, a bigger piece. I would never, I'm not someone that would, I don't attend or want a sleeve or anything, but I do like my little ones that I can talk about that do have a story and meaning and stuff.
Yeah, all of them. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have two tattoos and this is pretty painful. I don't remember how, I think you forget.
I do small ones. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
And the most painful one was my, I have one on my, above my right kneecap on my thigh, and it's of the skyline of where I was staying in China. In
Hong Kong. Cool.
Yeah. Yep. So that one I have, and that one hurt really bad.
Yeah.
Definitely look up a pressure points before, pain points before going to get one if you're, you know, not liking pain or
I go with the philosophy of not really doing my research too heavily and just like, I think it'd be cool to have it here and not like looking into like the pain and everything because it's gonna hurt no matter what. But yeah,
some of them, there's two that I would say if I could redo, I would put, not get rid of them or like regret getting them, but I would definitely place them somewhere else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like obviously bad, but like just two other places, but I'm not someone, like I said, I don't plan on like continuing my collection, and so they're in the way per se or anything.
Yeah.
I feel like even though those two, maybe I would have put them somewhere else, they still are there for a reason or impactful.
And for me,
all my tattoos, I don't have any like back ones or anything. All my tattoos, you can
see it
visible. I always have them where I can visibly see and cover up, like for work, like professionally, like if I had a job where, you know, some jobs still you can't have tattoos or show tattoos,
right?
So for those kind of reasons, I'm being smart about that as well.
Yeah, I was noticing because I talk about it here too, but it's like I do the art modeling, so that's like completely nude, and I only had like the one tattoo when I'm starting in New York City. And then I got a new tattoo recently, and I've noticed like in some classes and stuff that students actually draw the tattoos, both of them in now. I was like, oh, I forgot I have that one, the second one now.
That's
sort of funny. So I was like,
Yeah, I mentored a year and a half / 2 years ago, I mentored middle schoolers, and they used to love coloring. They would use Crayola markers and color in all my tattoos. Ugh, they loved doing that so much. Crayola all over me.
Yeah.
Yep. And would draw things over it. This would be a dragon flame at the end of the day or something, and the airplane.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
City view, a city and an airplane crash, whatever it would be, or something.
Something.
So, yep. So definitely tattoos definitely bring up a good conversation. They're a good conversation starter.
Oh, they are. They are a good icebreaker. Yes, for sure. It's like,
it's good though, because like you said about the pain, I can tolerate tattoo pain. I have no piercings. I cannot, I'm too scared to get anything pierced.
Oh, like even your ears aren't? You're like the, okay.
Forgot any, never. And
okay.
I now, obviously I could deal with it because I've gotten tattoos. People always say that piercings take longer to heal, and then you got to find a jewelry, keep it in for a certain time.
Yes.
And you can't sleep on the side, so then I get worried because, you know, you can't control how you sleep and stuff. So I just haven't done it yet, but
I would,
if someone told me today, hey, tattoo or piercing right now, I would totally just do a random tattoo. And if it's 6 hours and painful, the most painful spot, I would do that over a piercing.
Really? Okay.
I'm saying, my mom's always like, you know, you were able to sit through all of those, but you can't, you know, do that.
Get a piercing. That's something.
But I'm not scared of like a lot of people that have tattoos. They're anxious about getting their blood drawn. I can still get my blood drawn and stuff. Like, I'm okay with other needles.
Yeah.
It's just the healing process. I feel like a lot of people say that their ears get infected and or the hole closes up, and that's like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I would not do more than the two ear holes. Nope, I'm good. I'm totally good. I see people with like their nose and like all these other ones. Like,
yes.
I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. People who do the belly button, like it looks cool, but I was like, no, absolutely not. I could not do it.
And even ear pierce, like the ones you get as a kid when you're 5 or so, even those, I don't know, just seeing a hole in someone's ear freaks me out. Like, I don't know why. Uneasy in the stomach. So, yeah, that's also why I'm like, I don't know if I could imagine myself having a hole in my ear. Like,
No, I'm good. Like,
but obviously though, too, like all of my tattoos, though, they're ink in my skin permanently. You know what I mean? So that's awesome.
Like they are holes, but they're very, very tiny, tiny, tiny.
Yes. And permanent ink dyed into my skin. That's a real concept to think about intellectually as well.
It's different. It is different. Having, I don't remember getting my ears pierced, and I'm glad I don't, because I don't remember being pleasant. Yeah. It's like, I think the feeling was like, I would not do this again.
Yep.
But the tattoo was like, oh, I forget, like, this can be pretty painful too.
But you get once you get one tattoo, you have an adrenaline rush. Like, I remember when I got one, the next week, I got the one in my arm in Chinese, but even though like it was painful and like it hurt, it was weird because since it was symbolic, I was like not like thinking about why I was getting it, but just like that kind of that memory. So each one I've gotten, I totally remember where I was, what I was doing, you know, and all that stuff. So it's very symbolic in that way for me.
Oh yeah. Well. I went to the skyline and everything. I was like, there's meaning behind all of them. Wow.
Yep, definitely.
That's really cool. I definitely got us on a tangent about all your tattoos, but it's always really cool to see, because I was seeing hints of it. I was like, okay, I see hints of tattoos. I have to ask now.
Yep. And what's weird about this one, cool though, but different, but it will never be technically straight because, you know, think about like your forearm and stuff. It moves and turns.
Yeah.
That place obviously was straight at the time and obviously straight kind of here, but every time you move your arm and stuff, it warps.
Yes. Okay.
And anyone would be completely gray. Like 180, just flat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is kind of interesting. Yeah. That's a good point. That's the one that was like, keep going. Right. In Chinese. Yep. You said it as like something shot you. That's all I got.
Yep.
I was like, don't remember the first two characters, but I remember shot and chew.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I think you stick me in the middle of nowhere in China, I might struggle just a little bit, but I'd figure it out because I'm determined. Yeah,
I would struggle more than I say. When I say I could get around, I think bathroom, food, like the necessities. And then I hear they're like, obviously being in that culture and hearing other people speak Chinese, I think I would get it more.
You would sort of get it more. Yeah. Because you did study it for so long. So.
Yes. So, yeah. So I think I would remember, and I'd hear words. I'd be like, oh, I hear dog. Wait, dog. And then like, you know, think about that. Know that's what they're talking about. But it also, you know, as you know, probably it depends on the dialect, because a lot of dialects I cannot understand. I will not. And I don't know where in China certain people are from, but sometimes I hear someone, they're speaking Mandarin, and I'm like, it does not sound like they're speaking Mandarin, but I can pick up on some, like, I don't know what you're saying.
What you're saying. Yep. And then the whole thing, you've added Cantonese into it. So it's like Chinatown in New York. I think a lot of people speak Cantonese. Mm-hmm. I was like with three like ABC. So like actually like Chinese born Americans. At least I think they are. I don't know. But they were like talking and they were ordering Cantonese. And of course the woman was speaking to me also in Cantonese. I was like, oh, okay, I barely got Mandarin. Like, I'm not going to get this Cantonese thing down. So at the end of the meal, it's like, okay, we got to get the check. I don't know how to say that in Cantonese. And it just so happens it's the same word in Mandarin and Cantonese. It's like, oh, well, I could have done that. But
yeah, you just know.
I'm like, my Don. It's like something like, it's like, what? It's the same word. You guys are all. Yeah.
All very different of what, and traditional Chinese versus simplified even. Oh my goodness. But that's, I can tell now based off school, but you know, someone else that is not used to Chinese, it's like, what, why there's a difference, you know?
Yeah. So why is this so complicated language?
Yeah.
But I guess we speak the hardest language in the world, English. So.
Yes. Oh yes. At least we learned English.
We got that down, you know, just by our circumstances, but wow. Yeah, well, let me finish off with my last question that I always like to ask, but is there anything you'd like to hear from other adoptees, anybody else who is interested in learning about Chinese adoption?
No, I don't think there's anything big that I would like to learn. I mean, I think the everyone obviously grieves things differently as goes through their own thing. And I enjoy listening to your podcast to learn everyone else. It's so cool to see how their stories are so different, whether they are studying Chinese or have never studied Chinese or gone back to China, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
So I just like to learn, of course, other people's stories as well, and just continue that as well for people to be, you know, that they're not alone. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you reached out. I always love it when people reach out and it's like, I'd like to talk about my adoption. It's like, oh, exciting. Let's go. What time zone are you in?
Yeah.
First question. Nice to meet you. What time zone are you in? So we can schedule that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. I'm not sure if you use social media at all, but did you want to share your, do you use social media at all?
I'm good. Yeah. I just use like, I really don't use Instagram. I use Facebook, but you know.
Whatever. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I don't have to include that, but that's totally cool. If anybody wants to reach you, they can always like contact me and I can always let you know. That's happened before too. People who don't usually use Instagram, they'll be like, oh, I wanted to email this person. It's like, yeah, let me just ask if it's okay if I.
Do you usually have people that find people?
Sometimes. I had somebody who reached out because I guess I think Allie I spoke with was talking about a research project or something related to a very specific aspect of adoption, and somebody had heard it. And it's like, hey, could I talk to Allie about this
topic.
Research? Yeah. And so I was like, Allie, could I share your email with this person who's looking to talk to you about this very specific? It was so specific that I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I may share stories, but I do not know much about research related to adoption. So that's a different area. But
nice. Yeah. Well, thank you again for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you, Emma. This was a lot of fun. And I'll keep in contact with you, of course. Goodbye for now.
Look forward to hearing it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening to ABC, Adoptees Born in China podcast. You can reach me at adoptedbabiesfromchina@gmail.com or Adoptees Born from China podcast on Instagram and Facebook. Woohoo!
Thank you.